Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Stress, tension, doubts, lack of clarity, overthinking. Okay. This is the human condition. In the society as our societies have become, I am sure that hundreds of years ago, and even thousands and tens of thousands of years ago, there was also stress and tension and lack of clarity and the games in the mind, but I believe that it was a lot less. People's duties and people's roles were really very clear. What they were expected to do was very clear. The possibilities open to them were very few. The stress tended to be matters of putting food on the table. If you go back far enough, you know, back to tribal living, protecting yourself from the animals, protecting yourself from warring tribes, protecting from fevers that come. Today, what's happened, and the reason that this is now what you've said is an epidemic. If we go around, I would be shocked if there were anyone here who wasn't presently or within the last very few days, weeks, months suffering from stress, tension, lack of clarity, overthinking. This has become an absolute epidemic, and I really believe it's because the way that our societies are today, the benefit, the beauty of it is you can do anything. The roles, the chains in many ways that bound our ancestors, not even that long ago, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, they pretty much knew what they had to do. There was a specific role that they played. The jobs that they were able to get, that they were able to dream of, where they were able to go, what they were able to achieve, was really very prescribed. These days, it's a wonderful blessing. Everything has opened up. It doesn't matter in many cases what your parents did. Doesn't even matter in most parts of the world, thankfully, whether you're a man or a woman. Doesn't matter what you have to begin with. The world is now at our fingertips. It's an incredible time in history where, when you just look in India, for example, a boy who grew up selling tea on train platforms has become the prime minister. I mean, if you need any more evidence of what is happening in our world and the amazingness of it, there it is. The problem, though, that comes from it is without roles, without those duties very specifically prescribed, it's hard to know what to do. But along with that lack of clarity of just what to do, which really should be just a beautiful confusion. I mean, it should be the equivalent of walking into a restaurant where everything you love to eat is there. Well, you've only got one stomach. It can only take in a certain amount of food. But it's a beautiful predicament to be in because you love everything. Everything is open to you. You know that whatever you eat, you're going to be super happy. It should be that type of predicament. Wow, I have so many opportunities, so many possibilities. I could do this, I could do that, I could live here, I could live there, I could study this. But the reason that it becomes not a happy predicament, not like being in a restaurant full of all your favorite food, is because along with the opening of society and culture is also a new type of pressure, an identification pressure that says who you are is based on what you do. You walk into the restaurant, nobody says who you are is based on whether you eat the chocolate chip cookies or chocolate cake or vanilla ice cream for dessert. But what you choose out of this buffet of paths, of careers, of places to live, of life journeys, determines not just what you do, it determines who you are. And this is the predicament we're in. It shouldn't determine who you are. But with society and culture now identifying us, judging us, labeling us, creating a world in which we identify ourselves based on what we do. That's where the pressure comes. Then it's not simply a matter of, oh, I started to do this job. I thought I was going to love it. I didn't love it. I'm going to start something new. Like I started the chocolate cake, wasn't so good, decided on the vanilla ice cream instead. Instead of being an easy, joy-filled, possibility-open choice, this is now your identity you're carving. And that's why it has become so stressful. It's not just you practice medicine. You are the doctor. And along with being the doctor, you are the successful one, the rich one, the one people look up to in the community. That's a role. Alternatively, you couldn't make it through biology class, no matter how much your father wanted you to be the doctor. Biology just wasn't your strong suit. You could not remember all of those different parts of the cell. Instead of becoming a doctor, you've gotten a job in a company, kind of low level. Okay, well, you're just a clerk. You're going to feel down. People, when they talk to you, will put you in that box. That box will create a box within you. Your parents begin it. Ah, become a doctor. Dad's a doctor. Uncle's a doctor. Your older brother's a doctor. You should be a doctor. Doctors are this high profession. We grow up maybe where even they're talking about, oh, those low-level people who are clerks. Fortunately for you, you're going to be a doctor. It begins very young, but it doesn't let up. Ah, the rich ones. Ah, the poor ones. The successful ones. The not successful ones. And so what we do has become this box of who we are, which creates an incredible amount of stress. Because, yeah, you better figure it out. And not only better figure it out, it better be good. It better make you a lot of money. It better be socially acceptable. It better be something that when your parents go to parties, they can hold their head up and say, "My son is this." It now has all this baggage with it. You're no longer expected to simply do your duty, fulfill your role. You are now responsible for how comfortable or uncomfortable your parents feel at parties, for how your spouse or children feel about themselves in society? Do they have the expensive shoes that all their friends have because their dad has the money to buy it? Or do they not have the expensive shoes their friends have because their dad doesn't have the money to buy it? And so you start to see where that stress is very obvious. Now, here's the solution. We cannot go backwards in our culture. There's no point even thinking about, you know, rewinding the clock. But we do have options. We do have options about how much we buy into. We do have options about how much we allow other people's sickness to infect us. I mean, if other people want to identify themselves as their titles and their careers and their bank balances and the size of their waist and the type of jewelry they're wearing, no problem. It's a free world. But that doesn't mean that we have to. What we know is that all of the suffering in the world, this is one of the core teachings of the spiritual tradition, is that the suffering in the world comes from that false identification with the body. And this is written thousands of years ago, which is how we know it's not just a common phenomenon. I just think it's gotten a lot worse. The suffering, the ego, the anger, the unfulfilled expectations, the grudges, the depression, it stems from this false identification with the body that says, I am this being. I am what it looks like, how beautiful or ugly it is by societal standards today, in this particular society. I am how much money somebody is prepared to pay it to do something. I am all of these things. I am what's happened to it. I am what it does, what type of uniform it wears every day, where it goes to punch a time clock. I am those things. And in our scriptures and our sages and our saints remind us all the time, this is the root of suffering. Because when the stock market crashes, or when you've got an acne breakout on your face, or when you got fired from your job and downsizing, or when the relationships that you identified as who I am, I'm so-and-so's wife, well, when so-and-so divorces me or dies, it all starts to fall apart. I'm so-and-so's mother. I am a mother. That's who I am. Well, when my kids grow up and move out of the house and no longer need me, I not only have an empty nest, I have an empty heart. And so this is where they've said this is the cause of suffering. Doesn't mean don't do those things. By all means, do them, no problem. I mean, you can't do all of them, of course, but pick and choose. But realize it's what you're doing. It's not who you are. The jobs that we have fulfill a wide variety of criteria. For some people, that job is their calling. Occasionally, it's rare, but it happens. There are people who have always wanted to be actors or singers or dancers, and they become famous and they are able to make a living performing on Broadway or in Bollywood or Hollywood. There are people who all they've wanted to do their whole life is be a fireman. And they grow up and they become a fireman. And nothing else matters because that's all they've wanted to do. That is who they are. Great. But it's very rare. Most people, the jobs they do are things that they do because it's a way to put food on the table. There's very few people who would get up every day and go to work if they weren't being paid to do so. That's what we call seva. That's the spiritual work. But there's very few people in the workforce who, if their bosses said, you know, I'd like you to keep coming in every day, but unfortunately I'm no longer going to be able to pay you. There's not very many people who would continue to show up every day. We do it to make a living. And I mention this very specifically because that means it doesn't necessarily have to be your calling. Your calling could be to be a musician, to be an artist, but you're not one of those who's able at this point to make a living in Bollywood, in Hollywood, on Broadway. So you become a waiter. So you can work nights and go on auditions in the daytime. Well, clearly being a waiter isn't your calling. But it's what you do so that you can eat while fulfilling something else. My favorite example of this is you see these people on the sides of the road cutting rocks to become the gravel. They're literally hammering piles of big rocks into medium rocks, medium into small. Well, clearly, that's not their calling. Clearly, they were not put on earth to be rock hammerers. And yet, that's what they need to do to put food on the table. And through doing so, maybe one of them, this is the way I think of it, maybe through one of these people rock hammering, day in and day out, he's bringing in enough money to keep his daughter in school. And maybe his daughter becomes the very first girl in their whole slum to go to school and to stay in school. And maybe by her going to school, the other girls in the slum are inspired and they say to their parents, let us go. And so maybe he's actually a revolutionary without even thinking about it. Maybe long after he's passed away, his slum becomes world-renowned for being a slum in which girls actually go to school instead of pick through trash. He wasn't planning on starting a revolution. He was just a man with a great heart who didn't discriminate between his boy and his girl, his son and his daughter. And just as he wanted his son to get an education so he didn't have to hammer rocks, so he wanted his daughter to get one. And so we can look at this and we can understand, that was his purpose actually. But he may not have even known it. In his whole life, he may not have known it. And the truth is, he didn't have to know it. All he had to do was put one foot in front of the other each day, doing what his inner voice said. This is what you are meant to do. And whatever it was that was going to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads, he knew he had to do it. And I mention this because if you can shift what to do from which is going to be my calling, how can I find a job that's going to pay the rent and is what I'm put on earth to do? If you can shift that focus and kind of widen it to realize, well, actually, during my life and even during the course of one day, I can do so many things. I can have a job. I can have hobbies. I can have a spiritual practice. I can do seva. And so that which puts the food on the table doesn't have to be my calling. Choose something. Put one foot in front of the other. Allow yourself to walk through that door, and then as other doors open, this is how the world works. You walk through one door, And as you walk, suddenly other doors start opening and you realize from inside it says, ah, turn here. I thought I was going down this road. But as I got to this door, I felt such a strong pull this way. Then you walk down that way. And then as you walk, maybe another door opens. Ah, here. But sitting and being stressed and trying to figure it out in your mind is almost never the answer. Yes, you have to plan. Okay, here are my expenses. It means I've got to get a job that makes this much. But then you just start moving. You can overthink everything. You can overthink yourself into paralysis. Literally. You can get to a point where you do nothing. Simply because you can't figure out what to do. So there comes a time when we have to literally just give the mind a rest. Choose something, listen to the heart, move forward with it. But move forward with it with an open heart. So that maybe it was only meant to take you a certain way. And then another door opened. And then another door opened. And then another door opened. And this is how you move through life.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. We've been really interestingly socialized and conditioned toward negativity. This is the conversation that always happens with the media, right? We do, for example, a lot of work with the media, and when you talk to media people, you say, my God, could you people ever report on something positive, for God's sakes? I mean, there's so much great news happening in the world. Why are you only giving negative stories? And what they say is, that's what people want to read. And then, of course, we say, well, that's what people want to read because that's what you print. And it's a chicken and an egg situation. You know, you don't know exactly which came first in that situation. But nonetheless, what we do know is we have been conditioned or socialized to love that which is negative. You know, you say a negative thought comes and it stays. Well, it stays because on some level, I'm enjoying it. There's a part of us, this is the same instinct that when people get together, if you actually put video recorders or just audio recorders in every one of us without us knowing them, and then you rewind them and you studied them for negative and positive conversations, what I think you would find is the vast majority of conversations are negative. Even the ones that we consider quote-unquote harmless. You go to a party, you go to a wedding, you go to someone's house for dinner, you come home, you're in the car, It's very rare that people say, wow, so-and-so looked fantastic. They're doing great. It was so nice to see them so happy. We sit in the car and we say, oh my God, so-and-so got really fat. Did you notice? We love it. There's something in our conditioning that has primed us to love that kind of talk. If you literally just put audio recorders in people's living rooms, in people's cars, what's the harmless chit-chat gossip that we're doing with people? We're talking trash about other people, even our friends. My God, she should really, you know, like look in the mirror before she walks out of the house. What was she thinking? She wore that sari last week. My God, just silly, stupid nonsense. But we like it. And so in the same way, when the negative thought comes in our mind, it stays because on some level we enjoy it. It plugs into that aspect of us that enjoys the negativity. Positivity has started to seem boring to people. We hear this actually, tragically, a lot on a spiritual path. Well, God, I'd love to be spiritual. I'd love to, you know, go more on a spiritual path, but I would miss the drama of life. You know, I think I would get bored on a spiritual path. You hear this a lot. So there's this incredible misunderstanding, misdirection, that mazza, that excitement comes somehow in this negativity, in this nonsense. So when it comes, it's there because that's become our habit. What to do about it? Well, nicely, the same thing to do about what happens in your thoughts is going to have a ripple impact in your relationships. And, you know, so many people come in and they talk about their children. We want to give our children sanskaras. I want our children to be on the right path. I want our children to be spiritual and not material. What do we do? How do we get them back on track? And they don't even realize that actually they're the ones who, in their own conversations, these seemingly harmless, nothing chit-chatty conversations in cars, in living rooms, around the dining room table, have actually been the things that have sent our kids off track. You know, the phone rings, you're running late. You're supposed to meet people. It shows you on the phone, it's the people you're supposed to meet. You say to the child, we're on the way. Tell them we're on the way. Now, your child knows that you're soaking wet in a towel. You've just walked out of the shower. You're clearly not on the way. Nonetheless, they're obedient. They do what you say. But later on, when these kids start lying, we are the most honest people. We are dharmic people. We are sanskari people. How did our kids go off track? We don't realize the subtle impact of this. So the conversations that we're having outside are mirrors of the conversations we have inside. That which is inside is that which is outside. And so as the negative thoughts come, don't latch on to them. Don't hook on to them. If you imagine that you're looking at a blue sky on a windy day and there are clouds that are blowing across that sky. So those clouds are the thoughts. Okay, the sky is your consciousness. Now, when a cloud comes across the sky, you have two options. One option is you hook your attention into that cloud and you follow it all the way across the sky And you keep following that cloud wherever it goes. The other option is you focus on the blue sky between the clouds. And this is as we meditate. But it's not just as I close my eyes and sit in meditation in my mind there. It's as I bring meditation into my life. When thoughts come, I have a choice. Do I hook into them and follow them? Or do I focus on that space between the thoughts? So for example, I'm stuck in traffic, supposed to be somewhere, negative thought comes. Hell with this, I hate this, whatever it may be. Some negative thought comes in that moment. Now I have a choice. What most of us do is we hook into it. Thought was, I hate this traffic, hell with this traffic. I hook into it and suddenly it becomes, this always happens. It's my stupid wife or my stupid kids or my stupid mother or my stupid employee or somebody who made me late. They always make me late. I've told them 1,000 times to be ready on time. They're never ready on time. I cannot believe it. Why doesn't anybody listen to me? What kind of respect? Why do I have no respect ever? My God, I've worked 50 years to hold this family together. Nobody can even be ready on time. So you see where I've gotten, where I started and where I ended up, and you could keep going. I remember, last week also she made me late. Last week we missed the flight. My God, all that money, I had to get new tickets. They're totally ungrateful. They don't realize, may sube se utke daftar pe jato, to work for them. So a little bit of traffic, a little bit of frustration, one negative thought, and suddenly here I am at war with my family. By the time I get to the next red light, I'm ready to disown them all. Or to fire everybody in my business. I mean, whatever drama I've cooked up in my mind on this thought. So that's one option. The other option is I stay focused on the space between the thoughts. That blueness of the sky, that consciousness, I just bring my awareness back to my breath, back to my mantra. Back to whatever I meditate on, even with my eyes open. And then, of course, another thought comes, and I do the same thing. What we don't really deeply realize is our thoughts are tickets. Where we end up, we have gotten there on our thoughts. So if you are miserable, it is your thoughts that have made you miserable. I'm not saying that external circumstances have been fantastic and perfect. Nobody's are. But the internal experience of the external is due to my thoughts. And we pay very little attention to how we hook into them, which thoughts we get on, whatever thought I hook myself into. It's taking me to where I'm going to end up. I cannot decide that I want to end up at a destination of peace or joy, light, ecstasy, and have thoughts of frustration, of anger, of competition, and keep getting on these trains, on these planes. They're taking me to misery. Which means I better figure out how to get on the thoughts that are taking me where I want to go. And it's not about pushing them away. You cannot repress them. It's not about pretending I don't have them. It's about laying a new pattern. As I said, we've been conditioned, we've been programmed. by society, by our media, by a thousand things, to prefer the negative. Well, give yourself a new programming. It's never too late. This is the power of thought. Decide from now on, I'm going to think peace. I'm going to think love. Not in a repressive sort of way, not in a fake way, but I'm going to see the joy. I'm going to see the perfection everywhere. And if I can't, I'm going to create enough space in myself that whatever that thought of negativity comes, it just dissolves. It dissolves into the spaciousness of me. But I'm not going to hook myself into it, into any thoughts. I'm going to keep hooking myself back into the space between them. Because ultimately, that's the goal. It's not about good thought or bad thought. It's about the space between the thoughts. That's where we want to go. So just as you do when you meditate, you keep bringing yourself back in the same way in life also. Thought comes, okay, just bring yourself back. Back to the mantra, back to the breath, back to the center. And eventually that'll lay a new sanskara, a new habit. You know, nothing will stick. But it takes practice.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. Choosing right from wrong. Well, there's so many levels. There's so many levels of right from wrong. So we have on the most basic level, our level one superficial level. And by superficial, I don't mean less important. I just mean literally the layer on the outside, right from wrong. So for example, unless you happen to be a doctor committing heart surgery, you know, conducting heart surgery by sticking a knife in someone's chest, in any other circumstance, stabbing someone is wrong. Stealing is wrong. Yes, I mean, we could come up with examples, bring home food for your child who otherwise would die. But in general, we could all pretty much agree on some rights and some wrongs. Killing is wrong, stealing is wrong. This is where you get your Ten Commandments, right? Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery. So these are sort of agreed upon rights and wrongs. But then you go a layer deeper. Take his question, for example. My dad's an engineer. I'm rephrasing his question, but my dad's an engineer. My uncle's an engineer. Everybody in my family's an engineer. My brother's an engineer. They've always wanted me to be an engineer. I hate math. Cannot do it. I really want to be a musician. Or I really want to take sannyas. I want to be a monk. I want to live in an ashram and shave my head and do seva. Is it right or is it wrong? And of course, there's no right or wrong answer here. But when we talk about dharma, which really is the, I mean, there's so many definitions, but dharma is that which protects us, literally. I mean, the word, when you pull it apart, the pieces of it mean literally dharma is that which protects us, that which holds us together. So if dharma is what holds us together and protects us, we have our universal dharma, integrity, honesty, nonviolence, truthfulness, non-stealing, yes. But then we also have individual dharma. For him to be forced to be an engineer instead of a monk, in my book, is wrong. It's his own dharma. Yeah, and he may decide later on that he wants to be an engineer. He can get back on his engineering path. Who knows? But for us to try to force people according to our vision of right and wrong, to me, is not right. Look at people's choices of sexual orientation. I mean, there's so many parts of the world where right is a man, a woman. Is it wrong for two men, two women? I don't think so. I mean, it's not my choice. But is it wrong? No, it's just different. Nonetheless, there are a lot of parts of the world where it's not only morally wrong, but it's illegal. I wouldn't say that any government or any society has any right to say what you do behind the closed doors of your bedroom and who you do it with. But this is my opinion. You know, and this is the... There is no right or wrong answer to these questions of what's right or what's wrong. We can't be the moral police or the karmic police. But inside each of us is our own compass. And it's different from each other. So the engine, the you know, monk being forced to be an engineer's brother is an engineer. He loves it. He's been good at math since he was a kid. He's been, you know, pulling apart the clock and the microwave and the blender and putting them back together and since he was a kid. His moral compass, I mean, sorry, his internal compass, engineer. This one's internal compass, artist, musician, monk. By our own internal compass is the way to know right from wrong. And this is the only way to know. If you can fall asleep at night with the choices that you've made, they're going to be right. Doesn't mean they're easy. Doesn't mean they're easy. Depending on how many people there are in your sphere, how many family members, how many friends, how many colleagues. The choices you make are going to have impacts on them. It's what life is. I mean, as an employer, I've got, say, 5 people, room for 1 promotion. 1 person has quit or gotten promoted higher. There's 1 empty spot. I've got 5 people to choose from. five different backgrounds, five different CVs, five different skills and abilities. But I could make a case for any of them being able to fulfill that role. Depending on how you look at it, any of them would be good. Nonetheless, I have to choose one. It means four of them are going to be hurt. Four of them are going to go home tonight feeling selected against. So making choices in life cannot be based on the fact that no one will be hurt. You can't live like that. I mean, obviously we hurt as few people as we can in as gentle a way as necessary. But you cannot simultaneously marry two suitors. You cannot give one promotion to five people. So whatever choice you make, as a parent, you know this. You try to be even, you try to be equal, you try to, you know, make everybody happy, but inevitably, there's differences. We try to move through the world, bringing as much peace, as much joy as we possibly can, bringing as little pain as possible. And of course, that's not only in our choices with our loved ones or our workplace, it's in our choices of what we eat. That's one area I actually do feel really comfortable saying right and wrong. I think the meat industry is wrong. I think it's wrong because we are running out of water on Earth, because we're running out of food, because of what's happening with global warming. And we know by United Nations statistics that the meat industry is the single greatest contributor to global warming. We know the way it's pulling food out of the mouths of starving children. That's an area I would say I think it's wrong. Nonetheless, clearly, society and lawmakers don't agree with me enough to either outlaw it or even make it morally reprehensible. But we have choices. What I eat, what I wear, what I buy. Am I one of those shoppers where for me it's about how much can I get for as cheap as possible, which means that the companies I buy from have to employ child laborers and sweatshops in order to fulfill my demand for cheap goods? Or am I going out and insisting on organic and fair trade? Am I living simply so others can simply live, right? There's right and wrong here as well. Again, not a legal one, not even a societal one. Everybody's got their own internal compass. But the choices we make when you start thinking about right and wrong, it really takes us into every moment of our life. And what I have found is that when you begin with things that are relatively easy, by committing yourself to living a life of rightness. And of course, it doesn't mean nobody's going to be hurt. There are arguments to be made for the fact that, you know, carrots have feelings. People certainly do, but literally there's now even science evidence that vegetables can feel. So until and unless I can live on air or rocks, I've got to eat something. So you simply choose the least harm. The least harm. Okay, they don't feel it as much as an animal. We know that. They don't have nervous systems developed like an animal. We know that. Similarly, have to wear clothes. They have to be produced somewhere. Production inevitably produces waste. Waste inevitably contributes to pollution. Nonetheless, we don't live in a society where walking around naked is socially acceptable. Have to wear something. But you choose as low on the harm meter as possible. Buy organic, buy fair trade. by, you know, simply. And then you move into the rest of the areas of your life. Your relationships with others, your relationship with yourself. Because just as you have a responsibility to others, you have a responsibility to yourself. And this is what we all have our own internal, what Pooja Swamiji calls GPS for. That's what we have to have faith in. Because if he convinces himself to be an engineer just because his brother is, it isn't right. By his dharmic standards. I mean, take the ultimate example, and we'll conclude here, but take the ultimate example. Take the war of Kurukshetra, right? So we could pull that apart and say, I could say to you, well, tell me, is it right or wrong to wage war on your family members and gurus for a piece of land? Right? By most standards, that would be wrong. If not illegal, at least on a moral and spiritual standpoint, most of us would agree that a piece of land just wasn't worth slaughtering the members of your family or your gurus. And that's the situation that we find ourselves in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, in which Lord Krishna makes it abundantly clear that fighting this war is exactly the right thing to do. Not because slaughter is a good thing, not because it's being done for a piece of land, but for all of the reasons that he gives us in the Bhagavad Gita about fulfilling one's dharma. And, of course, about not being the doer. You're not the slaughterer anyway. Who are you to, you know, kill them? Suddenly you've got divine powers? Of course not. But that war was right specifically because it had to do with dharma. It was all about fulfilling dharma. And Arjun was not allowed to do what in most of our books would be the right thing, which was put down his arms, go into the jungle, meditate, and let them keep the land. Because his dharma was a warrior. Universal dharma, nonviolence. Arjun's individual dharma, warrior. Your dharma is to stand up and fight this battle. And so the goal for each of us becomes, how can I connect so deeply inside that the divine voice is in me? Whether it's the Bhagavad Gita, whether it's the Bible, the Torah, the Quran, the Guru Granth Sahib, whatever for me is that internal guiding compass, or no books, just my own internal self. My connection with God of no name, no form, no religion, that's also great. God doesn't insist that you come in a box. But that you connect with that so that you can literally hear the Gita, your own Gita, because of course your dharma is different than Arjun's dharma. Nobody could walk out, take a bow and arrow and start killing people and say, well, look, Krishna said to do it. That was Arjun's dharma at that intersection of time and space. Your dharma at this intersection of time and space is different. And that's why you need to connect deeply inside to hear that Bhagavad Gita inside. What is your dharma right here, right now? And you'll know. Because when we're living it, sleep comes much more easily. Our breath comes much more easily. Food digests much more easily. There's an experience of moving through the world. Not that it's easy, but just moving through the world in alignment with that which is right for us. that truth. So, yes, there's a beautiful quotation. I think it's Margaret Mead who said, education, the best education, is not teaching children what to think, but teaching them how to think. And we've gotten a little overemphasized on what to think in our education system, in our culture. And we've stopped teaching people how to think. Because when I know how to think, when I not just with my mind, but with my heart, well, then I'm going to know how to live. So in our schools and in our lives, let the goal be how to think, not what to think. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.